You're listening to TIP.
On today's show, I bring back John Engel to talk about Tesla in depth and other high-profile stocks. We dive deep into how Tesla's stock and business have performed in the past year and what investors can learn from this Tesla experience to be ready to take advantage of the next potential Tesla. John is the president of Almington Capital and chief investment officer of Cannabis Capital Group. Tesla has been a very popular stock over the last year, so I wanted to bring on a guest to talk in depth about it. On financial news, you often hear all of the good things about Tesla, with few people talking about the potential negatives of the company. So I wanted to bring on a guest to talk about the other perspective of Tesla, and John is very clearly a Tesla bear. This episode is not meant to tell you to not buy Tesla if you believe in the company. Rather, my goal with the episode is to force you to hear and understand the other side of your investment. A lot of people fall victim to confirmation bias, which means you only look for resources that confirm your opinions. And I think that's even more prevalent with popular stocks like Tesla. Popular stocks, especially those with huge returns in a short period of time, cause FOMO, which is the fear of missing out, and people buy without fully understanding what they're buying. So I brought John on to talk about the bear case and why Tesla might not work out as an investment. If you still believe in Tesla and your thesis for your investment after this episode, that is great, and you should continue to hold. But at least you'll hear the potential risks to your investment that I don't think enough people are aware of. Now, without further delay, let's get into this week's episode with John Engel.
You're listening to Millennial Investing by the Investors Podcast Network, where your host, Robert Leonard, interviews successful entrepreneurs, business leaders, and investors to help educate and inspire the millennial generation.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Millennial Investing Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Robert Leonard. And with me today, I bring back John Engel. Welcome to the show, John.
Well, thanks for having me back.
For those who didn't hear our last conversation back on episode 52, tell us a bit about yourself and walk us through your story.
My name is John. As you already said, I am an investment professional, consultant, and all-around market gadfly. I have been particularly interested in a number of sectors, including automotive, technology, and aerospace, as well as investing in private markets, in venture capital spaces, usually in the startup space, focusing on a range of technologies, including fintech in particular, as well as AI and no-code machine learning.
When we had talked last year, I think it was, or earlier, when we had last talked, you had been quite bearish on Tesla. As we've seen the huge rise in Tesla stock last year in 2020, did your opinion change at all? And if not, can you remind the listeners of what your opinion was of Tesla?
Well, my opinion was then that Tesla was wildly overvalued. However, I would observe that I think I said during our conversation last time that I was unsure of where the stock would go due to the fact that it was all that its stock price was already wildly unmoored from economic fundamentals. That was a warning that I think I gave, one that I would repeat now. But my opinion then of Tesla was that the company is essentially an automaker that is radically overvalued, doesn't have any particular strategic moat that will protect it, and faces rising competition from a number of automakers providing electric vehicles that can compete with Tesla at every level, making its current valuation, which puts it now as values it at essentially more than all non-Chinese automakers combined, like the market capitalizations of all other automakers, other than some of the other like Chinese bubble automakers like NIO, which we can talk about later if you'd like. But my fundamental view of Tesla has not changed. The company hasn't changed particularly. The only actual thing that has changed in terms of my bear thesis is that the price has risen to such an extent that should the company manage to pull off a really, really substantial capital raise, they could have enough cash to grow similarly to what they claim, but still probably not justify its current valuation, which assumes wild growth. I mean, if you want to think about it in terms of like market size and how market capitalization of companies usually behave in relation to them, you have to consider the fact that Tesla at more than $800 billion market capitalization represents like about a third of global auto sales annually. Like that's, and yet Tesla's actual market share is less than 1%. So you're talking about a really massive divergence.
When you talk about raising additional capital, break down what you mean for us there.
Tesla currently has the capacity in its two existing factories, one in Fremont, California, and one in Shanghai, that collectively can probably at full scale produce close to 1 million units per year. They built and sold 500,000 in 2020, well, just under. But they intend, according to Elon Musk, to by 2030 be producing 20 million vehicles per year. So they have to, in order to reach that scale, build the plant necessary to do that. If you think about it, like in terms of what their previous automotive plants have cost, and assuming, you know, let's say 10% cheaper over time as they get better at making them, you're still talking about, in order to reach 20 million capacity, having to build roughly close to 40 plants if you're talking about 500,000 units per year. And at about $4 billion per factory, you're talking close to $170 billion in CapEx over the next 10 years, which is a lot. And so Tesla has this $800 billion market cap. Could it engage in like pretty substantially dilutive capital raise to raise something approximating that? It could probably do it. And the reason it has to raise that capital is because currently it is essentially not profitable with its current operations. So it couldn't possibly fund even the tiniest fraction of that necessary CapEx through operating cash flow or free cash flow rather. So you're talking about, that's basically the only way that Tesla could grow to the extent that people that is being priced in, although it's actually really being priced as if they're going to be producing substantially more than that number of cars or be making a lot more money somehow in a relatively short span of time.
It's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it?
Well, up to a point. The problem is that it's a bit, there's a reason why Tesla has largely kept to raising in the few billion dollar range. Even their last capital raise was about $5 billion. And that's because it is difficult to find the appetite in the institutional investment market, which you would need to fill that sort of enormous capital raise. Even stretched out over, even if you did it in equal parts over 10 years, that's, you're still talking about $15, $16, $17 billion in new equity sales per year. So to do that, you need to have institutional buy-in. But institutional investors have ridden Tesla to a degree, like quite high, but institutional holdings are at their lowest. There was a lot of efforts to sell to retail buyers in the last few capital raises, which all indicate that it's going to be hard to soak up that level of investment. So when I say that that's the only path, it's basically that Tesla has to find a way to convince a lot of buyers who aren't willing to stump up the capital to put a lot of money into it. And also depends on the market cap not being diminished over that period of time as the reality of its performance fails to meet the modeled expectations built into, you know, this outrageous market capitalization, which is, you know, in itself also probably derived to a degree from just similar to, like, you know, Bitcoin's parabolic rise, a frantic FOMO that results in driving the stock up, especially with just a tremendous amount of retail options trading that has had an impact on that as well.
It was pretty hard for anyone interested in financial markets to not have heard how well Tesla stock did last year. They're up, I think, over 700% just in the last year, which means that they went from being about a $100 billion company or so to nearly $700 billion, which I think is absolutely crazy because it wasn't that long ago that we were talking about the first US trillion-dollar company, and now Tesla is right there knocking on the door of becoming a trillion-dollar company as well. What do you think has really been the main driving factor of Tesla's stock over the last year, and how did the underlying business perform in comparison to Tesla's stock?
Fundamentally, it's all about narrative. So you have the emergence of this belief that Tesla will dominate, you know, the auto market. No sign of that so far. But there's a multitude of sort of expectations that have been built into this. So you have an ecosystem that's evolved around Tesla, unlike almost any other company. You can, like, there's pretty much nothing like it, where you have loads of dedicated fan websites that are also focused on sort of pumping the stock and supporting it, as well as a number of market analysts and fund managers who I consider to be shysters for the most part, selling, you know, an insane narrative. Like, you have the Cathie Wood of ARK Invest, whose ETF has developed and has taken on incredible growth in terms of assets under management, which is scary in itself. But you get things like, you know, the model on which they base their Tesla valuation has hard-coded results. Like, they don't care about the actual performance. I think that's the point. But no one cares about the performance. The people driving the stock and talking about the stock are not people who with experience or meaningful understanding of the automotive sector. So it's just become a story that this company is doing all these things that will make it the, you know, app will basically become Amazon or Apple, like just dominate a sector that is essentially impossible to dominate. So it is boils down ultimately to misunderstanding and relentless narrative reinforcement.
How long do you think a disconnect like this between the stock and the business can really maintain itself?
When I first started following Tesla a few years ago, I didn't think it would take nearly as long. I mean, in fairness, it did lose a lot of its value for a while, but then that was reversed. But I did not believe that it could possibly keep going the way it did. Turns out, in this particular sort of unprecedented market environment where, like, extremely low interest rates, very little consideration of actual sort of DCF consideration of, like, valuations of companies, thinking about cash flows, but instead the product has sort of become the stock in many ways. And that's, you know, a problem that I believe is not reserved to Tesla. It's a issue that has affected lots of companies, even in its own sector, companies like Nikola, but as well as companies in various, like, technologies, where you see companies like Lemonade with a market cap that was almost the total addressable market at one point. When the product becomes the stock, all that matters is the direction of the stock, not the fundamentals of the company. And as long as the company manages to deliver performance that is in line with near-term expectations, which are always extremely conservative, then people can continue to believe that next year will be the year where we see this not double-digit economic growth, but triple-digit. Because, I mean, you fundamentally have to think about it. It's like Tesla is weird in that it isn't even growing the way a company valued the way it is usually would be. And that's because they're very good at basically selecting markets. Like, they've continuously been able to hide the weakness of initial markets where vehicles are brought to market in order to, by essentially going to, like, new markets. In the case of 2020, it was mostly China, to continue to keep the top line growing in that way. So, like, if you actually look at it, like, US sales of Tesla rose about 6% in 2020. Which would be good, like, under normal, like, for a normal company, like, in a recessionary environment. It speaks to the real limits of growth for a company like Tesla. That's, you know, an automaker with only four models, two of which are aging and rapidly falling in sales.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's sponsors.
Hey, everyone. It's Patrick, your host of Millennial Investing. Every year, my buddies and I do a guys trip to escape the cold and dreary Ohio winters. Once we pick our destination, without fail, we all jump on Airbnb and find an incredible place to stay. We just got back from an amazing trip in Palm Springs, California, and our Airbnb home was a huge part of creating memories we'll never forget. I loved it so much, I'm taking my family back to Palm Springs for spring break, and we're staying in an Airbnb home my kids fell in love with and picked out themselves. While I was there, I had the realization that my own home could be an Airbnb. It's an excellent way to earn some extra cash, whether you're saving up for your next vacation, paying off some bills, or investing. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. That's airbnb.com/host.
Buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise flagship fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its $1 billion real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise Flagship Fund to your portfolio in just minutes and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/millennial investing. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise Flagship Fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.
Do you guys ever feel overwhelmed with all that's going on in the markets and feel like you just can't keep up with the day-to-day news headlines? Today's show sponsor, Yahoo Finance, is my go-to solution to keeping up with today's top news and stay informed with what is happening globally. With Yahoo Finance, I'm able to see the biggest trends and biggest movers in the stock market, what is happening with interest rates, major geopolitical events, and much more. If it wasn't for Yahoo Finance, I would have no idea that Tesla is laying off 10% of their staff or why iPhone shipments are down 9% year over year. Yahoo Finance also has a number of other cool features, including a tool that lets you link in all of your investment accounts, analyst ratings and independent research, as well as the ability to create customized charts. Yahoo Finance is one of my favorite tools I use in my investing toolkit, and it's what I use each morning to kick off my day and stay in the loop with what's happening in the markets. Join more than 90 million monthly users today and get comprehensive financial news and analysis at yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
All right, back to the show.
A big news story for Tesla stock in 2020 was whether it would be included in the S&P 500 or not. Tell us what it means to be included in the S&P 500, why it was important for Tesla, and what the actual outcome was.
S&P 500 index includes 500 large mega cap stocks that are supposed to represent like a core basket of America's most valuable and profitable companies. So they have to be companies that, in order to be included in the index, a company must first demonstrate consistent profitability, which is defined by the S&P as 4 consecutive quarters of profitability. So Tesla managed to do that once. Then the S&P committee passed. Then the next quarter, Tesla reported another profit, and then the S&P committee admitted them. So now Tesla is a member of the index, and that matters because for a number of reasons. Like it was a natural tailwind because any funds that are linked to the S&P 500, like any index tracking funds, the underlying assets have to reflect the composition of the S&P 500. So there was a significant buying pressure, especially amongst the large pools of ETF related and or index fund, private index fund related investment vehicles having to buy Tesla. So that was a major impact. And like inclusion in the S&P 500 is usually considered the stamp that a company is sustainably profitable, ready for the big leagues. It's not just growing the top line. It's actually delivering. It's able to keep operating and growing without recourse to capital markets constantly, basically. The problem with Tesla's inclusion, if I can sort of move into the next question, is that the profitability or like the quality of the earnings, you could say, that they reported to get included was not great, in the sense that in order to deliver a profit, the company first had to radically reduce CapEx expenditures and R&D. In 2019, for example, they had effectively negative CapEx, which is weird for a supposedly growth company, given basically they spent less on CapEx than they did on depreciation. So they basically borrowed from the future in order to do that. They also relied heavily on the sale of regulatory credits. So any automaker that makes an electric car gets tax credits, and it depends on the country and jurisdiction, like what the composition of that sort of regime is. In the US, there are credit for each vehicle, and California, where Tesla is based and where its largest market is, has an additional tax credit that Tesla has made great use of. So other companies trying to sell in California have to buy those, like so trying to sell an internal combustion engine vehicle, have to buy a credit to offset it. So this credit market, while Tesla was the dominant or like only electric vehicle maker around, meant that there has been a scarcity in those credits. And in order to get so, Tesla's been able to make hundreds of millions of dollars per quarter by selling those credits. So that's in almost all the quarters where Tesla has reported a profit, if you exclude those credits, they didn't. So that means that from their actual operations, from like the actual cost of the operations of the business and then selling products, they can't make money. And one might say, well, they can keep selling credits, but they can't, or at least won't be able to much longer because of how many more electric vehicle makers are coming into the market. So the more credits there are, the more flooded that market is, the lower the value of an individual credit. So, and also there's also a reduced demand for them because as automakers make more of their own EVs, they don't need to buy tax credits to offset them anymore. So you're looking at a juicing of their earnings that is totally unsustainable and is going to gradually disappear over the course of the next year or two, and will leave them like the core business that is essentially unprofitable with some work could be barely profitable, but is much less impressive than literally any other automaker on the planet.
According to a CNBC article from December 20th, 2020, Tesla's shares actually fell 6% after it entered the S&P 500. And it entered the S&P at a 1.69% weighting, which would make it the fifth largest weighting. Did it fall after its inclusion because of the different types of accounting policies that you were just talking about, or was there something else at play?
No, the fundamentals don't matter to anyone right now. The downward pressure was the brief downward pressure was largely the result of punters basically misunderstanding that the index funds that need to include Tesla will have already bought all that they need ahead of the inclusion. So basically, there was just principally a imbalance between buying and selling for a little while that pushed it down, found a new level, and then began climbing again.
Given what you mentioned about the credits and how they've arguably artificially inflated Tesla's profitability, if that doesn't continue into the future and they struggle to get back to profitability, is it possible for them to be removed from the S&P 500 just due to profitability?
Oh yeah, like if you don't meet the qualifications of inclusion, like I believe there are, I don't actually recall the exact rule for being removed. Basically, if you start being unprofitable for a certain number of quarters, you fall out of the index. So it's not permanent. Every year, there's usually some rebalancing. Some companies are added, some are removed.
Is that a major risk for Tesla? Or do you think that Elon Musk and his accounting team could somehow drive one quarter of profitability in that range that they look at so that they don't get dropped?
I think longer term, especially if they have to grow the way they're supposed to, and they have to spend a lot, and the additional impact of the fact that like you can see that their sort of saturation effect in markets like California, you can see the competition effect in the EU that's forcing down, you know, selling prices, which reduces margins, compressing their ability to make a profit. And eventually at scale, one would hope that they would be able to turn a profit somehow from selling cars. Like, apparently other companies are able to do it. So it wouldn't surprise me if Tesla managed to do it somehow, but their current problems are pretty profound and it would take a lot to make it sustainably profitable. The other challenge for S&P 500, it'd be a race between whether they turn into the red again that drives them out of the S&P, or as expectation is the eternal future of Tesla's market domination sort of diminishes into the ever further distance, that its valuation compresses, which would kick it out of the S&P 500 potentially as well. If it was valued like a normal automaker, or even double, if it was given a 100% premium to how automakers are usually valued, which is usually less than 1x book value, Tesla would be well and truly out of the S&P.
What role does the valuation play in the S&P? It's not strictly is it due to size?
Yes, it's basically supposed to be the 500 most like consistently profitable companies is what it's trying to indicate. You know, it's supposed to be a large cap index.
My guess is that if there is, it would be or likely has been quickly arbitraged away from super investors and supercomputers. But is there an opportunity or strategy to buy companies that are potentially going to join the S&P 500 or possibly even short companies that are expected to be removed from the S&P 500?
Yeah, that is a viable strategy for sure. It's not one that I engage in all that much, but like if you have a high confidence in a company's index, like imminent index inclusion, or getting close to it, there's a decent bet there. As like as can be seen in the case of Tesla, obviously everything with Tesla is sort of magnified to, you know, up to 11. So the growth, like the share price spike ahead of inclusion, was greater than with a lot of companies. But there is definitely a short-term trading opportunity there that is sometimes harder than usual for the sort of algorithms to play, because the timing is itself kind of uncertain.
When we think of shorting and we talk about Tesla, for the most part, shorts have been crushed. Since 2012, Tesla is up nearly 100 times. If you look closely at the stock chart, there were some times where short sellers might have been able to make some money on short-term trades. But over the long term, investors who have been short Tesla have just absolutely been crushed. Talk to us a bit about shorting Tesla and other speculative companies.
Shorting the valuation of a company, even shorting companies that have like significantly more profound problems than the valuation, can be a painful exercise in futility sometimes. At least it can feel that way. That's certainly been the case with Tesla. It's, I think, more so the case in the current market environment, where things like where conventional short opportunities that include things like securities law or like legal enforcement have diminished as sort of regulatory framework has been pulled back and a lighter touch has been taken with a lot of companies. So those like one promising shorts are made worse. My Tesla short is quite small. It will be until there is a significant downward correction. So you can miss, I'm not too worried about missing the first 20 or 30% drop. When the wheels come off of a company, they tend to come off spectacularly. And with Tesla, a company that is just bizarre, that will almost certainly be spectacular. Barring what I said before, that they somehow managed to finagle just enormous amounts of capital raises in a very short period of time. So basically raise a bunch of money at the current valuation before people realize that this valuation is nonsensical.
One of my favorite quotes that relates to this whole concept of shorting companies based on valuation and other semi-speculative stocks is that markets can stay irrational far longer than you can stay solvent. I just feel like that is so important to remember when you're considering shorting companies like Tesla and even other high-flying companies like Lemonade, Snowflake, you know, all these other companies that are trading on crazy valuations.
It's usually better to wait for the jaguar to come out of the tree before you start trying to fight it. That's probably the best like advice on the short side.
Where do you think Tesla is going from here, both in terms of its stock and also the underlying business?
It's interesting. So there's a few catalysts that are coming up that, like with a normal company, would almost certainly be considered negative. But with Tesla, it's very hard to know what will actually punish the stock. But if you want to look for the things to watch, like in terms of what could significantly move it, I don't see anything significant on the positive side. I mean, they've got the factory they're trying to build in Germany, but their German official said today that they don't expect it to be operational before July. It'll probably be later than that. So it's not going to be adding much to earnings, but you have other catalysts, like just this evening before our conversation started, the National Highway Transportation and Safety Administration announced a recall of more than 150,000 Teslas based on its basically faulty screens, like their little display screen that kind of looks like an iPad in the center of it. And those are the sort of things that shorts have been talking about for a long time. Like that's like the design of those, one of the selling points that they're bigger than those of any other automakers. And that's because other automakers know that using the particular sort of consumer electronics design that Tesla used was not durable and would almost certainly end up failing, which is exactly what's happened. So you see Tesla like heavily optimized for the short term. So basically, as time progresses, Tesla's business, the gremlins in Tesla's business will gradually like spring to the surface. You have significant like legal danger from that. You have enormous danger from the fact that they've been selling for years full self-driving capabilities for thousands of dollars to buyers who have not and likely will never see the promised functionality. And as time passes, as people sell their vehicles or people who leased Teslas and bought the FSD capability when they did, will be returning their vehicles without ever having gotten those. And that's the sort of time when you start seeing people asking for refunds. And a company that's doesn't have a lot of cash, doesn't really make a lot of money except via selling its one profitable product, which is its stock, that's not good. So so that's another thing that like we've already seen one recall. We've seen the Chinese government crack down on Tesla already. there are other short-term optimized issues with its vehicles, including things like battery degradation, that will increasingly become problematic. And eventually those things will add up. And then you also have just the impact of, for the first time ever, 2021 will be a year where you really see, although 2022 will be significantly bigger, but 2021 will be the year where you really start seeing competitors eat into Tesla significantly. So Tesla lost EU market share in 2020. Meanwhile, you have companies like VW that they now, like in 2020, they sold 240,000 battery electric vehicles, which is the half of what Tesla managed. And, you know, that's 50% more than they had sold a year prior. So they're growing faster than Tesla in Tesla's one niche. So you're looking at like really significant competitive, internal financial, internal operational, and legal risks all piling up. As I said, a normal company that like people will be talking about this, and that would be the only thing people wanted to talk about, but Tesla isn't a normal company. So which of those things, if any, or which combination of them is what ends up waking people up, we'll see. I mean, so far, Wall Street analysts have simply copy-pasted their next year's expectation into the, basically just move the Excel cells one cell over as each year it's failed to do anything that it promises. If there's one thing that's going to like really bury the Tesla narrative in sort of one fell swoop is if they're compelled or it becomes just like abundantly clear that they're not going to be achieving level 5, like total, like full autonomous driving in the span that they say. You know, like Elon Musk keeps saying next year or this year always. And, you know, in December, he said it would be 2021 that full self-driving exists. He's lying. It's not true. Like there's no chance that happens. Literally every other developer of autonomous vehicles says that that's fanciful. Tesla isn't even in the top echelon of developers, according, like if you actually look at how industry researchers view that space. It's like that's an example of the world, like the public sees something radically different from what's actually happening. And when the two meet, eventually you get a blow up.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's sponsors.
Hey everyone, it's Patrick, your host of Millennial Investing. Every year, my buddies and I do a guys trip to escape the cold and dreary Ohio winters. Once we pick our destination, without fail, we all jump on Airbnb and find an incredible place to stay. We just got back from an amazing trip in Palm Springs, California, and our Airbnb home was a huge part of creating memories we'll never forget. I loved it so much, I'm taking my family back to Palm Springs for spring break, and we're staying in an Airbnb home my kids fell in love with and picked out themselves. While I was there, I had the realization that my own home could be an Airbnb. It's an excellent way to earn some extra cash, whether you're saving up for your next vacation, paying off some bills, or investing. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. That's airbnb.com/host.
Today's show is sponsored by public.com. That's where you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. While we can't say for certain it's the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, a higher rate than Betterment, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express too. So, if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty damn up there. This is a paid endorsement for Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member of FINRA-SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into a partner bank where they can earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosures/high-yield-account.
Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Everything seems to be more expensive these days. I've noticed this at my own businesses that I've run. You'd be wise to find proven ways to cut costs and boost performance at the same time. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/MI. netsuite.com/MI. That's netsuite.com/MI.
All right, back to the show.
If you're familiar with it, what do you make of Michael Burry, you know, pretty publicly shorting Tesla?
He's late to the party, but like probably smart to have been. Michael Burry is like a smart guy. He's very good, completely comfortable with taking unpopular positions that can hurt for a while. So I would see it as indicative of, you know, a guy who knows what he's talking about in terms of radically overvalued. Like it went to highly risky in the sense of systemic risk, not in the sense of economic systemic, but systemic to Tesla in the sense that it is internally riddled with problems. Glad that he's on the side of the angels, shall we say.
Where do you think that you could potentially be wrong? I mean, it sounds like you're still quite bearish, like you were last time we talked. What could happen for Tesla? What could Elon Musk do? What could the company do that might actually make them live up to their valuation or even grow?
If you had asked that question last time, there were a number of ways it could do. There were aspects to which it could grow into a $100 billion valuation by actually committing to far better quality control, better manufacturing practices, taking the probably short-term, like the nearer-term hit of recognizing they need to raise a lot of more capital to invest, dampen people's expectations probably, and like moderate them. But instead, they've sort of leaned into all their worst impulses. Like at this point, at its current valuation, where it's valued at more, the 5,000 vehicles it produces is valued at more than the 10 million produced by American and European automakers each year. There is no way to grow into that valuation other than to become that size. And that takes a lot of time and takes a lot of money. So even if it grows into that valuation, the dilutive effect would mean that even if it has the same market cap with 20 million vehicles in production, which would still be overvalued, anyone who owns the stock now would still be down. So it's in an almost impossible bind. The one thing that could change it would be if Musk is right and Google, Ford, GM, Aurora, Amazon, and a dozen other developers of autonomy are wrong, and Musk is right, and that he's actually going to be able to develop autonomy not only an order of magnitude faster than anyone else thinks is possible, but also do it with a much more limited sensor suite, then it might be worth what it is eventually, maybe. But like that's a big if. And if you're going to be betting on a guy who's like known to make outrageous and impossible promises, makes products that are like subpar, like you only need to look at the quote unquote third row seat of the Tesla supposedly seven seater to know that what he says is going to materialize often is not the case. Like the reality is that people often, it's like, don't bet against Elon Musk. He sometimes is overambitious, but will deliver eventually. Just look at the Model Y as a perfect example of when he ends up delivering a product, but it's not much like what he originally said it would be. And it's substantially worse. And so I think that's do you want to bet on that guy or literally the entire constellation of tech and auto?
Despite Burry being quite publicly short the stock, he did give Musk one piece of advice, and that was to dilute the company by 10% right now. He said, dilute, raise 10% more money, issue 10% more stock, and raise $80 billion at your $800 billion valuation. What do you make of that?
It's interesting. And that's what I was talking about before, is that like if he can raise a phenomenal amount of capital very quickly, there's a path to maintaining this valuation and like keeping the story alive, even if like the actual like fundamentals of the car company aren't necessarily improved substantially. And also like lay the groundwork for like actually growing plants sufficiently to at least look kind of like a real automaker. And like Burry's not wrong. It's more a matter of how much Tesla stock can the market absorb and is it willing to absorb? That's what I said early on in our conversation about the appetite of institutional investors in that respect. Because diluting 10% doesn't mean the stock will just go down 10%. It can go down, like as the case with any time you look at any company that does a dilutive offering, frequently it causes dissatisfaction and drives it down. But on the flip side, if they sell it as we're going to have this like absolutely ludicrous war chest now that we can do all of our growth plans, no problem, that might actually buoy the stock a little bit eventually. So it's probably pulling off a 10% dilution at the current valuation is basically Tesla's only path. I'm not confident it could do it. It would not be an obvious short and still be a highly suspect company with a deeply suspect CEO, but it would be difficult to say that it can't at least grow along the lines that it wants to for a substantial period of time.
We think about Tesla, a lot of people will argue that what people get wrong or the bears get wrong about Tesla is that it's not an automaker. It's a tech company or it's some sort of different company. It's not just an automaker. What do you make of that argument?
Fundamentally, those people are either idiots or liars. Like, that's like there's no ifs, ands, or buts. Like the people who go on CNBC and claim it's a tech company or claim that it's an energy company are liars. They should know better. And fundamentally, 99% of Tesla's business, its costs, and its revenues are in the automotive sector. It is like, which by most definitions would define a company, what it is. Like if you look at the other things that it's supposed to do, like the energy side in terms of its solar deployments, like the solar roof was supposed to be revolutionary. 2018, I believe, was supposed to be the year of the solar roof. But if you actually look at Tesla's megawatts deployed in terms of solar, it's ticked up a little bit last quarter, but it's still significantly less than half of what it was at its height before it acquired SolarCity in order to bail out Musk's like previous boondoggle. So it's not an energy company. It has no advantage in that space. Lithium ion batteries are not great as a scalable storage method. In terms of like the power wall, like the energy loss is very high. It's radically inefficient compared to things like to just simply using silica heatsink battery. So throw aside the energy company side, then you can look at the autonomy side. But that's the other thing they talk about. And as I already explained, Tesla boosters who have no actual expertise or knowledge of or really interest in the development of autonomous driving think that Tesla's ahead. Like Google, Waymo, its subsidiary, is widely considered the standout leader in the field. GM is ahead of Tesla as well, you know, go figure. Amazon's investing big in Aurora, which is doing some interesting stuff. Tesla has no monopoly on, like has no leadership in, let alone a monopoly on like autonomous driving. And moreover, the challenge of that technology is such that it won't matter for at the very minimum, like 5 or 6 years, but much more likely in the 10 to 15 or even 20 year timeframe. It's basically saying like an automaker, it's actually an aerospace company because in 20 years, I think they're going to make a plane. That's basically what it is. And like Tesla basically engages in a highly morally dubious and dangerous practice of releasing a beta test. But ultimately, you know, even that is just in the parlance of autonomous driving, it's basically just a more advanced level 2 autonomy, like a driver assist. It's nowhere near the capability that it would be necessary to be truly autonomous. Like it's nowhere near that. And it probably can't be because it's being trained in a certain way and because it's designed in a certain way to be a driver assist. Basically, Tesla has been making bank on selling the fun stuff of autonomy and calling it full autonomy, while doing almost none of the really, really hard, very boring work of doing what, you know, Musk calls corner cases or like, you know, minor issues that are actually the big issues if you want to have cars that drive themselves without a driver. And you have companies like Waymo doing that rigorously on a number of roads, training their systems using a range of technologies and sensor suites, including things like laser, LiDAR specifically, that Musk claimed was not a good idea, but he did so only because Tesla couldn't afford to put LiDAR on all of their cars. So he just pretended it didn't matter, which is another example of short-term optimization. So boiling it down, Tesla is an automaker. It's an electric vehicle maker, but that's not special. There's lots of them. There's going to be tons. Like Tesla has might release the Tesla Semi, probably not, because the specs they claim are nonsense this year. They might release the new Roadster this year, but again, the specs seem to defy battery technology. They might be able to pull something off that looks passable for both of those. But those are two very niche vehicles in that product lineup. They've got no additional consumer product cars. They've talked about a $25,000 variant that could sell in smaller and more developing markets and as like an economy vehicle in the developed world. When Musk says that something is 3 years away, it's probably more than 3 years away. So how do they compete with the fact that in 2021, there are going to be 50 new EVs released that are not Teslas, compete in every niche that Tesla competes in, and tons more in the year after that? The market's going to be deluged in EVs, probably too many, to be honest. But that will make it very difficult for Tesla, firstly, to make the necessary gap-filling income from credits, but more importantly, it's just won't be as compelling an alternative value proposition when you can, instead of buying a Model 3, buy an Audi or a VW or a Toyota or literally a Chevy that all fit those things. And I think that the perfect example of Tesla's, how its short-term thinking has completely kneecapped its sort of even perceptual long-term growth is that, they unveiled, that silly Cybertruck that isn't road legal. Like it's too big and doesn't even have a bed, has angles that would make it impossible to use for any of the actual uses of a pickup truck, but it won't even make it to market if it ever did before several other EV pickups are available from GM, from Ford, from some of the new players that are getting into the space with backing from other like Lordstown Motors. Like they're going to probably beat Tesla with their pickup. Like that's impressive in and of itself in the sense that Tesla won't even be the first to market in like several segments.
If you had to make a bet, let's say 5 to 10 years from now, would you be more willing to bet that Tesla's to zero or to a $1 trillion company?
Like zero. At this point, I don't think it will ever be like a true zero, just because they've managed to paper over the problems to enough that there's probably someone who would buy them or merge with them. But no automaker is a $1 trillion company. No automaker is a $500 billion company. Tesla is no Toyota. I mean, like Tesla is no GM. Tesla isn't even a Ford. So my bet would be significantly closer to zero than to a trillion.
If we've missed out on Tesla for whatever reason, what can we learn from this situation to allow us to become better investors and possibly participate in the next Tesla?
The best lesson is that the way the market now is structured and the way participants behave in it has changed with people in sort of leading edge technologies or industries. People have demonstrated that it's very difficult to value terminal value of an emerging technology, in this case, electric vehicles or autonomy. That's one lesson that people tend to radically overvalue those things in the early stages and less so as time passes. So a good lesson is, if you see a situation where you're seeing a similar leader emerge in a way that's similar to Tesla, there is likely to be a tailwind, even if its fundamentals don't match up. But also, I think it's important, just in general, how powerful narratives and stories around stocks and the performance of the stock, it's the primacy of the performance of the stock over the performance of the business. I think it's become an increasingly visible phenomenon in capital markets. If a recession couldn't change that, it's hard to see what else would in the relative near term. But those are, I think, the key, it's a perfect exemplar of those profound psychological changes in the way people behave in capital markets.
John, thanks for joining me again on the podcast and doing a deep dive into Tesla. Depending on where the stock goes from here, we may need to have you back again to talk about that, talk about new revelations, whether it's gone down and you've been proven right, or if it's gone up and we need to just talk about what is going on with Tesla still to this day. So we'll see how things progress, but I look forward to chatting again. Where can everyone listening today go to learn more about you and the different things you're working on?
They can probably find me on LinkedIn or on Twitter. It's at AlmingtonCap or on Seeking Alpha. I also write there from time to time, as well as on Guru Focus and Yahoo Finance.
I'll put a link to all those different resources in the show notes below. As always, John, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
All right, guys, that's all I had for this week's episode of Millennial Investing. I'll see you again next week.
Thank you for listening to TIP. Make sure to subscribe to We Study Billionaires by the Investors Podcast Network. Every Wednesday, we teach you about Bitcoin, and every Saturday, we study billionaires and the financial markets. To access our show notes, transcripts, or courses, go to theinvestorspodcast.com. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any decision, consult a professional. This show is copyrighted by the Investors Podcast Network. Written permission must be granted before syndication or rebroadcasting.